You are listening to the cycling podcast at the 2023 Tour de France Femme. Today, we're in Albi.
You lose the tour because of this?
Yeah, then you're not happy.
You made it
because you worked so hard for your dreams, and if this happens to you and that's the reason why you lose, then be really sad story.
Well, that was the sound of a very disappointed Demi Vollering of SD Works, who was handed a 20-second penalty on the general classification today. But we'll talk a little bit more about that, about the what's and why's and how's and where does the race stand after that. But a much more important headline, Denny Gray, is that we're finally in Albi, which I've been banging on about all week, about how great Albi is and how I've just, you know, you'll have a great time because we're going to Albi and everything is great in Albi. And I don't think I've let you down, Denny, have I?
You haven't, Rose. No, when I arrived, having jumped out of a team car, as we'll find out later, I was a little bit nonplussed by your cheering for Albi, because we were in some nondescript kind of edge of town area that didn't feel particularly grand. But as soon as we walked into the centre here, it is absolutely stunning, to coin a phrase. Feels a little bit Venetian around here, I have to say, especially with the heat.
And with the Aperol spritzes, Aperol Sprite.
Yes.
What's the plural
spritz
of an Aperol spritz? Spritzes.
Spritzy. Aperol spritzy, maybe.
There you go.
That's very Venetian, of course.
But yes, thank you, Lizzie Banks, for noticing. We've just been having beers, haven't we, on all the other days, but we went for Aperol Spritz because Albi is like this beautiful red stone city. You know, it's got all these little winding streets that we're in right now. It's got a beautiful big square with a big red cathedral, the Toulouse-Lautrec Museum, which I was also waxing lyrical about, which Francois Tomaso will give us a little bit more on that. But we have had to go on a little side street, haven't we, Denny, to try and hide a little bit from the jazz bands that are just warming up in the main square. And we have on the line, of course, Lizzie Banks, who doesn't have an Aperol Spritz with her, not that I can see.
She's
on the clear stuff.
I've got an elderflower cordial. It's actually really delicious. Keeping my glucose levels up for what is going to be, you know, another thrilling episode of the cycling podcast webinar.
Okay, well, yeah, you don't have to look quite so, sound so sarcastic, Lizzie, but, well, Lizzie, if, you know, it's going to be so thrilling, then it all kind of comes down to how great your tale of the etap is, doesn't it?
I know,
so
I did say, I was going to say for a thrilling tale of the etap, but then I realised that put all the pressure on myself, so I was trying to do an Annemiek van Vleuten and put the pressure back onto the whole race rather than just on myself. But I guess I better get underway with the tale of
worked.
The etap. No, it didn't work at all.
It's time for the tale of the etap.
Well, Rose, there was big news before the race had even started today, with three non-starters, Jenny Risveds, Mia Otterstad, and Stage 3 winner Lorena Wiebers, the latter unable to start, having struggled with stomach issues the past couple of days and waking up this morning with a fever. There was yet more tummy trouble in the peloton for FDJ Sirius' French favourite, Evita Music, abandoning the race shortly after the flag dropped. A hot start was on the menu today for the 126.1 kilometres from Onet-le-Château to Albi, the famous Albi, with temperatures in the mid-30s.
The delightful Albi.
And the bunch splitting into three in the aggressive opening kilometres. A strong 11-rider breakaway went up the road. Paolo Patino, Misha Bredewald, Amber Crack, Olivia Baril, Luis Arachist, Justine Hikira, Claire Steels, Hannah Ludwig, Clara Koppenberg, Ella Wiley and Clara Emond. Canyon Schramm and Fenix de Koenig, having missed the move, both chased hard behind, with Sarah Tizzet WNT contributing as their white jersey was under threat from Ella Wiley of Life Plus Wahoo ahead. A puncture and rear wheel change for Demi Vollering of SD Works with 60 kilometres to go preceded an illegal tow back to the convoy and a severe telling off from the moto commissaires to sports director Danny Stamm. With the breakaway never gaining more than a minute on the bunch, they were swept up on the first categorised climb of the day, the Côte de Najac at 50 to go. With the polka dot jersey of Anoushka Costa distanced, Yara Kastelein took the maximum points over the top and then repeated the feat on the next time climb of the Côte de l'Aguepie. 36 kilometres to go now, and with the main peloton only having around 30 riders remaining after an attritional day out, it was Ricarda Bauernfeind of Canyon-SRAM who decided it was time to move. A strong attack on the climb towards the bonus seconds at Castel Fades, and Claire Steels was the only rider to respond. But as the road went up, Bauernfeind put the hammer down and Steels couldn't react. Bauernfeind hovered at 20 seconds ahead, but at 30 to go, the wind went out of the chase. The riders looked at each other, replenished their drinks, and before they knew it, Bauernfeind suddenly had 1 minute 30 to play with. At 20 kilometres to go, the very reduced bunch behind, with very few teams with multiple teammates, started messing about, attacking and counter-attacking, causing the speed to yo-yo up and down and playing right into the hands of Canyon-SRAM. 17 kilometres to go now, and not wanting a repeat of yesterday's second place behind an escapee, SD Works put European time trial champion and powerhouse Marlon Reuser on the front to rein Bauernfeind in and restore some order. With Reuser the only rider working, it was a head-to-head race of truth, and in 6 kilometres Reuser halved the gap to 40 seconds. With only a straight flat run into the line and Bauernfeind in sight now, surely it was all over for the young German rider. But with 4 kilometres to go, there was suddenly clear road behind Reuser and Lippert, who had been leading down the descent. Reuser powered on before realising the peloton wasn't in her wheel, and Lippert seized the opportunity and started to ride, as Reuser then refused to help the fast-finishing Lippert. No reaction from the bunch behind saw Bauernfeind heading through 3k to go with a 25-second lead on Reuser and Lippert, who had another 15 seconds on the favourites behind. FDJ launched an attack from the group, but it was all too late as Ricarda Bauernfeind pushed to the line and right through it for every single second, not even sitting up for a celebration as she could hardly comprehend the scale of her victory. Marlon Reuser stayed cool on the wheel of Lippert and came round her to take second place, with Capecchi winning the bunch sprint for fourth and once again holding onto yellow and green. Yara Kastelein regained the polka dot jersey for Fenix de Koninck, and Cedrine Carabal held onto the white jersey for one more day. Well, yet another young talent defying the odds and making it to the line for Canyon-SRAM's first Tour de France stage win and moving Bauernfeind 9 spots up the GC to just inside the top 10. A few more little shake-ups in the top 10, with Ashley Mormont-Passio taking 2 bonus seconds to move her into the second spot, whilst Demi Vollering dropped down to 7th, losing a potentially critical 20 seconds due to a time penalty for drafting in the convoy after her puncture at 60 to go.
Well, we will, of course, come to Ricarda Bauernfeind and what a fantastic that win that was for her and for her team, Canyon-SRAM. But, I mean, I think the real serious story of the day is Demi Vollering being punished, being given this penalty of 20 seconds on the general classification for drafting behind the Team SD Works car. They were kind of coming along on the left-hand side of the road with all the team cars on the right. There was even a race car in front, a DSM race car in front of them, which also meant that there was a bit of braking on the SD Works car, which would have been put Demi Vollering in, obviously, in a very dangerous position as well. But yes, a punishment for her. I mean, a little bit, Denny, you probably feel a bit vindicated, don't you? Because unfortunately, you said to Annemiek van Vleuten yesterday that, you know, are you seeing any GC battle over the next 2 days? And in a way, you know, as there's been an incident today which could actually affect the GC battle.
Yeah, I mean, this will probably remain a talking point for a couple of days. I mean, particularly if it ends up a very, very close race between Annemiek van Vleuten and Demi Vollering after the Tourmalet and going into the time trial. So
I should say other riders are available. Other GC riders are available.
Absolutely. And I'm sure Annemiek
probably not for spot one and two, let's be honest.
Well, let's see. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's an unexpected twist in the GC contest, and one that I'm sure SD Works will feel very hard done by. But of course, you know, we've seen other punishments given out for drafting in the past. I mean, Nils Eekhoff was famously disqualified from the under 23 World Championships after kind of drafting back on after a crash. So, you know, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I didn't actually get to see the incident. So I'm glad you've described it so beautifully, Rose. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe 20 seconds is I don't know what you guys think. Maybe it's not. It's quite a light punishment, given this. Mm. I don't know. I mean, it's a big. It could be significant in the GC battle, but it's not. You know, from what we're expecting on the Tourmalet and then the time trial, it may not be decisive in the end.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because if you look at the UCI regulations about this, and they're not. Obviously, there is this rule that you're not really allowed to draft, but there's no specifics on if you draft this amount of time or for this amount of kilometres. There really aren't any specifics, so it does come down to a little bit the jury on the day. But the rules do state that the lowest amount in a stage race, there is this penalty, this time penalty that gets given if you think that the drafting is worthy of a penalty, and 20 seconds is actually the least that you can be punished. So it's not like they were choosing between 5 and 10 and 20 seconds to punish her. 20 seconds is the least that you can get punished for this. But Lizzie, how did you read this? Obviously you have more knowledge than any of us about what you would feel is and isn't acceptable in the peloton.
Yeah, well, I mean, to start off, I tried to find specific regulations regarding this. I read the UCI's absolutely scintillating guidelines for vehicle circulation in the race convoy, and there wasn't anything specific regarding this. But there are some really important points in this case. That is that the sports directors drive on the right-hand side of the road, and the left-hand side of the road is reserved for motos and vehicles that need to move up the convoy. For instance, if a rider comes to the back of the peloton, puts their beat on in the air, then the car in question will come out of the convoy, drive up the left, go to the front, service their rider, and then fall back to their position in the convoy down the left-hand side. So when a rider comes back to the convoy, what always happens is, okay, the SD Works brought Demi Vollering back to the convoy, and I think at this point she was expecting to go around the left-hand side of the car because she had been in the middle of the car beforehand. That's where you get the most draft, and she was just coming around to the left-hand side because I think she was expecting to go into the convoy at that point. At that point, the SD Works car, instead of going into the convoy, letting Demi Vollering go ahead, and then her car being behind Demi, which is what should happen, the team car of the rider has to stay behind the rider once they get to the convoy. Now, SD Works' car actually continued up the left-hand side with the other race cars on the right-hand side. As you said, I don't think it was DSM car, but there was another car out in the left-hand column that was returning to their position. And this was the really critical moment, and I think the real reason that she got fined, because the SD Works car squeezed past and had to go onto the verge to do this, had to brake a little bit, and if it had been centimeters closer, they would have had to slam on their brakes and Demi Vollering would have gone into the back of the SD Works car. Mm. And this is a safety issue. This is a very, very important safety issue here. And that is why the car has to be behind the rider, and that is why the fine was imposed. I'm actually almost surprised, given the potential level of danger here, that the fine wasn't more than 20 seconds.
Well, before we go any further with this discussion, well, let's actually hear from Danny Stamm, who was the DS at Team SD Works. He was also the man behind the wheel. Let him have his say about why he did it and what his thoughts were on the penalty.
Well, I think it's totally ridiculous if somebody punches you and you bring her back to the caravan and you pass a couple of cars, and then you go to the side, that we get punished for 20 seconds. And I think also that UCI, I mean, we know they are always right, but I think they also need to look in mirrors and think a little bit, okay, what is actually the race? And I don't think something makes it different in the final stages from this, but we can lose the Tour de France on 5 seconds. And I think if this decision is made by somebody who sits in a car, probably never was on a bike, yeah, then I'm pretty disappointed in that kind of things.
What was the discussion between you and the commissaire on the moto? There was, you know, we could see on the television that there was a bit of a back and forth there. What were you saying to each other?
Well, not so much actually, because the windows stay closed, and he just said that I need to go behind my rider, and I think if you look at the TV, then I directly did that. So for me, it's also strange that we don't get a warning and that they don't say you need to go behind your rider, but they directly punish with 20 seconds. And I think it's too much for a for something like this, and it can have a big influence on the final of the Tour de France. And I think if we have decisions like this at top sport level for something small, yeah, then we really need to see if we are on the right way.
I think you're using it as an example, knowing it was such a high-profile rider involved.
I don't know. I have the feeling they don't think so much.
Is this actually written into the rule book that you can't go on the left side up from your rider up the caravan? Is that specifically written in the rule book?
Well, the problem is it's two different rules. I think the UCI rule and the national rules are different compared to what happened here. And the UCI said to me, yeah, it's tolerated normally, but not in the Tour de France.
Okay. I mean, how do you see the 20-second penalty, bearing in mind that the Tourmalet, I mean, the gaps can be huge on some a course like that?
It can be, but it can also be not so big. And again, I think if you lose the Tour de France on 5 seconds, then I hope that all the people that make decisions look a little bit in the mirror.
So that was a fairly kind of belligerent Danny Stam. He's kind of claiming that he didn't do anything wrong, kind of thinks that it's ridiculous. He thinks it's kind of a punishment for being at the Tour de France when the behaviour in any other race would be perfectly acceptable. But it's funny, you know, I was in the press room at the time and all of the journalists felt like it was definitely going to be a punishable thing, particularly when the commissaires were on a moto already coming up. Lots of wagging fingers. I mean, we're quite on the Tour de France, you get used to lots of people wagging fingers at you, but it was quite clear that the commissaire had seen the behaviour, was not happy with it, and it kind of carried on a little bit for longer until the commissaire eventually got actually up to Danny Stam, up to the window, and said, you need to stop. Obviously, Danny Stam's argument there was that, you know, he's car number one. As, you know, they have the yellow jersey, they're car number one. So in the convoy that goes behind the riders, they sit right at the front. But Lizzie, you know, is that a rule? Does that give any credence
shaking
to what he's
head.
Saying?
Yeah, no, because yes, he's right, he's car number one, and that means that he can follow the rider behind the rider all the way back up to his position in car number one, rather than slotting back into whatever position he, you know, if he was car 11 or whatever. But you have to be behind the rider. You know, his defence was saying, well, I was at the front so I can go to the front anyway, but he knows very well that you have to be behind. Maybe he doesn't know, actually, because maybe he's never at the back of the convoy because they win too much. But I know full well, you know, I crashed at the Giro, 70 kilometres an hour. I was really lucky that the car that came around me was the Israel Premiertech Roland car and wanted to help me get back to the bunch, because my car wouldn't have been allowed to do that. If it was my car pacing me back to the bunch, I may have been disqualified, I may have been fined. But thankfully, because the Israel car was essentially coming back to the convoy because there was a delay in the convoy due to my crash, they helped me back, and then as I went back to the front of the bunch, my car remained behind me. That's how it has to be done.
Yeah, that's because it's not, you know, they're not intentionally trying to help you, are they? You know, if it's another team car, and you are allowed to draft, but you know, hop. What we normally see is riders hopping along the convoy. You know, they go behind one vehicle and they hop onto the next one, hop onto the next one. I mean, it was kind of remarkable, actually. How, I mean, I think Demi Vollering, when she had this puncture, she was almost like kind of 800 metres behind the peloton, and it was almost in no time at all was she 100 metres behind, which is, you know, is kind of ridiculous, because obviously punctures are a part of racing, and you know, that's part of the luck of racing. Obviously Danny Stam is incredibly experienced DS. Maybe there's a little bit of a sense maybe that he felt, because he was so experienced, because they asked almost a, you know, untouchable team, that maybe they could get away with it a bit more, that maybe they wouldn't, you know, put a 20-second penalty on someone who was, you know, one of the GC favourites.
I think as well there's some of this hangover from the Vuelta and the way that they got stung there with their pee break and not being able to get back, and then later Niamh Fisher-Black also got barraged, and you know, it felt like it was a real, you know, punishment towards SD Works for being so good. But you know, the stupid thing is that in the Tour de France and in Grand Tours this year, teams are allowed two cars. So actually the race convoy is incredibly long for a women's race at the moment, much longer than it ever has been. And so coming back through the convoy is really not a stressful situation because there are so many cars to draft. It was 60 kilometres into the race, 60 kilometres still remaining. So the race wasn't actually on at that point. The other stupid thing is that Demi Vollering had lined herself up for a bike change. She'd taken her sticker off the handlebars that had all of her race markers on. She'd taken her bottles out of the cage, had one hanging in her mouth. And then they decided to do a rear wheel change instead of a bike change, which was much, much slower than a bike change, which, you know, would have been fast because she was bike number one, of course. So poor decision there as well, I think.
Well, where do you think, Denny, that leaves Demi Vollering? Because obviously 20-second penalty today. She obviously gained 8 seconds because she got yesterday in a bonus and got a little gap to Annemiek van Vleuten. So, you know, that kind of leaves her as a net 12 seconds down on Annemiek van Vleuten. I mean, I should say we did hear Demi Vollering at the beginning of the programme, and when she was talking to the press, she was just saying that she didn't know what she had done wrong and didn't know why, just found it, the whole thing, very strange and wasn't sure why it was happening to her. But yeah, where does that leave her? The Tourmalet is obviously a place where there can be very big time gaps. You know, 12 seconds down on your nearest rival, where do you think she stands now?
I mean, that's a really difficult question, really. I mean, it all depends how closely matched they are when it comes down to the Tourmalet and the time trial, of course. And I think this year we were excited about the GC battle because we think Demi Vollering has kind of stepped up a level with her climbing and her time trialing. So therefore we're expecting a much closer battle. So I think, you know, time-wise, obviously she's lost now some seconds to Annemiek van Vleuten. She's behind on GC, not by a large amount. And you'd expect there to be, as you say, Rose, some time gaps on the Tourmalet and the time trial, and therefore maybe 12 seconds might be inconsequential. But that's a might. That's not a definitely. And there's also the thing for Demi that she now has to... That's a psychological issue she's got to come over. There's the disappointment of losing 20 seconds. There's the fact that she knows now she's got to gain some time on Annemiek van Vleuten. It's not about defending time. So that she's got to kind of try and overcome that battle. Also, you know, I mean, you could say, well, you know, it was if it was the team car at fault ultimately for the penalty, you know, is it fair to punish the rider?
It's always like that.
This is a team game, isn't it? And you know, it's not an individual sport, and otherwise why would you have teams? So, you know, they're part of the team. She followed the car, and, you know, so I think if the commissaires felt a penalty is justified, then it should be applied to her, yeah. Unfortunately, in this case.
Well, I mean, I think we all hope, really, that the penalty is not going to come into it in terms of the final GC, that it won't be the deciding factor, whichever way it goes, that it won't be decided by a margin like that. I mean, obviously, we always look for racing that's very fine margins. It's always the most exciting racing. But, you know, if the penalty did come into play, I think that would be a real disappointment for the Tour, which has been very lively so far. And we can finally, Ricardo, don't worry, we're finally coming to you and your astounding win. A fantastic win for Ricardo Bauernfeind, and also great to see two in a row of a solo breakaway making it to the line, wasn't it? I mean, it's kind of a, I think almost we were so excited yesterday about Yara Kastelein, and we're kind of not giving Ricardo Bauernfeind her due, perhaps.
Yeah, it was a tremendous win. I mean, she, Canyon-SRAM were keen to be aggressive all day, as we find out from Magnus Backstedt later. And, you know, when I was at the roadside earlier, because I was in the team car, I could see them frantically chasing down the early break. They were obviously keen to make the race and then try to make it aggressive. And she picked the right time to make a move, and she took full advantage. You know, you have to give all credit to her. She went past, kind of, I was at the front of the race again, and she went past at 20k to go. She looked really strong. She looked fully in control, and with the kind of break and the chase kind of dithering behind, she took full advantage. It's nice to see another Canyon-SRAM generation rider winning. Of course, she's just like Antonia Niedermayer at the Giro d'Ornée, who won a stage and kind of got a breakthrough win. She's another rider that's come through Canyon-SRAM's development team. She's only 23. Okay, I know the Tour de France Femme isn't long in its history, but she's now the youngest rider to win a stage.
I like that.
At 23. But, you know, another kind of breakthrough win from Canyon-SRAM at a Grand Tour. It's a really nice story for them, and I think it bodes well for them, if they can cling on to their riders, that is, for the future, because they've always looked to kind of Nivea Doma to kind of get the big wins, and now they've got a couple of riders coming through that look like they might have the talent to kind of offer them a few more options.
I mean, it is fantastic always to see a bit of hard work paying off as well, because we've seen her be so close. The Vuelta Femenina, I remember we heard from her, didn't we, Lizzie, when we did our Arrive pod?
Yeah.
For that, because she was so close on the stage five in the Vuelta. She came third after Vollering and Annemiek van Vleuten ended up fifth on GC, but
that was bearing
I know I didn't even get to the Aperol slowed me down, and then Lizzie just swooped. She's on the elderflower
she was cordial. Fifth on the Queen stage, yeah
fifth and on then, the Queen stage, and then on the GC she was seventh overall, wasn't she, Lizzie? That is from memory.
I haven't got that written in my notes.
Fifth on GC. Aperol.
No, but you're right,
it's
Rose.
The heat. But no, I was also going to say she ended up fifth on GC, and that was including the fact that on the third stage, she actually, which was just a Voss win, a sprint stage, they actually, she got caught out and ended up in a, because there was echelons earlier, she got caught out and was behind and lost over a minute and a half there, and then yet she still ended up so high on GC even with that. So it's kind of that she's finally got a win after being such an impressive talent that all year.
Yeah, I mean, that fifth place on the Lagos de Covadonga stage was a real breakthrough ride for her, and we were
third place on the that I also mentioned, and also the fact that she
Mirador de Peñas Planas. Yeah, no, you're right. I butted in too early. I was thinking you were talking about the Queen stage, so that's completely my bad, Rose. But no, you're right. We spoke to her afterwards. We spoke to her. You know, we should just cut this whole segment. Sorry, listeners. We spoke to her after that win, and I think it was a point where she was beginning to understand what she was capable of. You know, I don't think she really knew that she could be that good against the likes of Van Vleuten and Vollering in a climb like that. And then there was a really big question mark around her coming into this race, because she went to Lotto Touring in Rundfahrt Tour and Tour de Suisse. She DNS'd in stage three of both of those races due to a knee injury. And I actually wasn't sure if she would actually be selected for this race, because, you know, the knee injury was obviously, you know, It had put things in doubt. You know, she'd had to be rested for a while. She wasn't able to race. Was it going to be a problem here? But clearly not. You know, she's come back and shown us all what she's capable of. But, you know, we've been following the Canyon-SRAM generation squad over on the Cycling Podcast Feminine, haven't we, Rose? And I think we were talking about her at the end of last year about the amazing season that she'd had last year, when she was U23 ITT and road race champion in Germany. And we were even then saying, like, you know, she could be something really exciting for Canyon-SRAM. And along with that injection of new riders, like you said, Denny, and the injection that Magnus Backstead has brought to the team in the really aggressive attacking nature, has changed the way that Canyon have been racing, and brought them more wins this year than they've had in donkey's years. Sorry, Canyon. It's great that you're having it now, but I mean, it's true. You know, they've won with Chloe Dygert this year. They've won with Ricarda Bauernfeind now on the biggest stage. And it's really great to see that everything that they're putting in to the Canyon-SRAM generation team, and feeding that into the Canyon-SRAM racing team, the extra resources they've put into sports directors and staffing side, it's all paying off. And it's really, really cool.
Well, you mentioned there, Lizzie, the man himself, Magnus Backstead, and Denny caught up with him at the finish.
Magnus, first of all, I mean, congratulations on an amazing win today. Talk us through how it went, and what was your plan going into the day?
Well, the plan was to be aggressive from the start and try and you know, create the break that went up the road and ideally have a one or two in it. that didn't quite go to plan as 11 riders went up the road without one of us in there. But then we quickly kind of changed around and decided to make it a very, very hard bike race until we hit the climbs and then go from there. And that's pretty much what happened. So in the end, we spotted a moment where the front group looked like everyone was, they were a little bit, on edge maybe, or I don't know, it just looked like everyone was looking at each other. So I said to Rika in the radio, look, in about 500 meters, there's another kick up going there for a kilometer and a half, try it. And she went, and I mean, from that moment on, it's just all her and her ability, you know, to hold that group off.
Yeah, I mean, were you worried at all that it might come back? I mean, Royce was kind of closing the gap, wasn't she, towards the end there?
Of course we were worried. I mean, when you see Royce getting on the front, you know it's a serious business. So, we knew it was going to be close. But at the end of the day, I think Ricardo rode really smart, and she kept on believing and kept on pushing. And I guess that's, you know, if you're not closing down a serious chunk of time very, very quickly, then the chase also tends to sort of slow down a little bit. And yeah, I'm just happy that everything worked out for us today.
Yeah, biggest win of the year?
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest stage, really. I mean, you know, it's the tour, isn't it? So yeah, by far the biggest one, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's been slim pickings for every team other than SD Works generally this year. So
yeah,
how pleasing is it to kind of break that kind of voodoo, as it were, and you know, show that a team like yours can win on the biggest stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously very, very rewarding when it happens, and I guess even more rewarding because it happens on such a big stage as well. But I mean, we pushed since the start of the year, and we kept on believing and kept on changing ways of how to try and win bike races. And you know, we've pulled off a couple of wins already this year, and another one, big one today here. So yeah, we keep on pushing.
The cycling podcast of the 2023 Tour de France Femmes is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Science in Sport are the world leaders in endurance nutrition. And that is key, especially when the riders are taking on the longest single stage in the modern era, like they have here at the Tour de France Femmes. Take SIS's Go Isotonic Energy Gels, the world's first energy gels to mimic the gut's fluid composition to be absorbed more rapidly into the bloodstream. Each energy gel provides 22 grams of carbohydrates to boost energy on the bike and stave off fatigue. So like all SIS products, Go Isotonic Gels are scientifically formulated to help riders maintain their pace for longer. Fuel, hydrate and recover like the pros at scienceinsport.com.
Well, Denny, you had another first today. We've done press buffet, caravan, a bit of a disappointing feed zone. Although, coming to it, you did do a few more feed zones today. But today was your first day in the team car, and you were with Life Plus Wahoo. And, well, let's just hear how you got on, shall we? Well, here we are, Denny, at the start town, Onet-le-Château, for stage 5 of the Tour de France Femmes. And you're about to embark on another one of your Denny's debuts, another one of your firsts for the week. You're going on. We're putting you in a team car today, aren't we?
Yeah. So I'm going to be joining the Life Plus Wahoo team. I'm being put in the second team car. And I am told that the team are hopeful there will be a rider in the break. So, and if that's the case, then the team car will go up and follow that rider. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed as a bit of action. I'm expecting some more feed zone action, so I'll be able to compare and contrast what happened yesterday. And yeah, just excited to see what goes on in a team car.
Okay, so how is your car sickness? That is, that's kind of key.
Well, yeah, as you'll have noted, Rose, I'm a cautious driver.
Yes.
We've been very politely not said anything. But so, yeah.
No, I think you'll find, Denny, I actually said that you were too polite.
Yes,
the politest driver on the Tour de France fam.
Yeah, I need to learn how to be less polite, apparently. So, obviously I'm expecting kind of some very fast thrilling driving in the back, or hopefully the front of the race. See how we go. I have to hold on to the side of the car, will I? Dear life.
Well, good luck, Denny.
So we're now about 23.4 kilometres into the race route today. We have stopped by the side of the road so the team can give up some bidons. It's an extremely hot day today, 31 degrees and not a cloud in the sky. So the riders are bound to be thirsty. So this will be an important stop. We've just heard the bombshell over race radio that Renovibus is a DNS today. And the team will be keeping their fingers crossed that they'll have a rider in the break. Okay, so here comes the first group on the road. Life Plus Wahoo have a rider in the break, which they'll be delighted with. It's 187. And a successful bead on hand over there. In fact, she's going for two, and she gets both of them. Morgan was down the hill slightly, and R2 was up the hill, so now they've got to get ready for the bunch to arrive in this baking hot sun. And here come the peloton now. The motorbikes are rolling through. It's a bittersweet start to the race for Life Plus Wahoo because we've been told that Kaja Rees, their Polish rider, has decided to abandon. She's suffering the after effects of a crash from last week, so we're going to be playing musical chairs in the car now with Spencer departing and Kaja joining us for the rest of the race, I believe. Okay, so just when we thought all of the groups had come through, there's another group on the road, a fourth group, and I believe Babette van der Wolf, the youngest rider in the race, is in this group, so she's just collecting her bottle now. There she goes, and that group is some way behind, so they're going to have to get a wriggle on if they're going to see the front end of the race again. So now we're just waiting for Kaja to join us. She's with the Voiture Ballet, which brings up the rear of the race, and she'll be joining us very shortly. I imagine she's extremely disappointed. Here she comes. Looks very, very emotional right now, but completely understandable. Biggest race in the world, and I'm sure she wanted to complete it. So that was the sound of Kaja leaving the car. It was, she was very down and dejected, as you can imagine, leaving the Tour Femme. Not many words said in the car, to be honest, when she was here, and I think she just wanted to be alone with her thoughts. So she's now getting in with the Soigneur, and she'll be taken straight to the hotel. And meanwhile, we're following the final group on the road now, Babette van der Wolf, and we'll be underway again in a minute to catch up with her and see if she needs any support or refreshment.
Babette, 5 minutes to the bench. Okay?
I'm okay. You have ice?
No, but we try to manage something.
You have ice?
Yeah, we're gonna give you.
Babette, come to me now.
So it's an extremely hot day today, and Babette van der Wolf was earlier asking for some ice, so the performance coach, Arthur, clambered into the back of the car there, cut up some old tights and filled them with large lumps of ice, and we've just done the handover to Babette. Hopefully that'll give her a bit of a relief as she continues her chase back towards the front of the race. So we've just been absolutely railing it on some back roads off the course. Morgan was keen to get up in front of the race, having been at the back of the race to do her feed, and they're busy now preparing ice and bidons as quickly as possible before the race arrives. That was kind of what I was expecting a little bit, just being thrown around in the back of the car as they kind of sped along at 80, 90, 100 kilometres an hour. And now we're waiting for the riders to arrive. So there are groups and riders all over the road at the moment, as we're about 66 kilometres to go. And this is now, the fourth group on the road. April Tacey's in there. We had Margot Vigy kind of just riding ahead of them, a couple of minutes ahead of them, completely on her own. No bikes, no cars, nothing around her. This is going to be a long, hot day for some of these riders. So we're now in front of the race yet again. Just had a nerve-wracking ride through the back roads again. And not only were we kind of railing it around corners at speeds which I am not comfortable with, being a self-confessed cautious driver, that was on kind of open public roads, so we weren't on the course. We were just desperate to get ahead. And I was talking to Morgan Nieske just now, the assistant DS here at Life Plus Wahoo, and he was saying, you know, it's a real logistical challenge for him and the team today, because they're just trying to do everything they can to give riders refreshment, give them ice, to keep them cool on a hot day like this. It's so important. So, and this is the only race of the year in which they've had two cars at the race. So this is a new job for him, and doing a very good job of getting around the course by the looks of it. But yeah, you need to have balls of steel to drive like he does. So here comes the final group on the road with Babette van der Wolf, some 18 minutes behind. Morgan and Arthur giving her the thumbs up, giving her some encouragement. And at the front of the race, there's only 6k to go, but another 21k to go for van der Wolf. So it just goes to show how big the gaps were. We're getting back into the car now, and from Morgan and Arthur's point of view, it's pretty much job done for the day now. So a final act of the day now. We've just come alongside Babette van der Wolf, and they've got about 10 kilos of ice to hand over to her to give her a last bit of refreshment before the run in back to the finish line. She's stuffing the ice into the back of her jersey.
Do you want something to drink?
To drink, Babs?
More ice? Allez, come on, Babette.
Come
Allez.
On, good. Good job.
Yeah, don't worry, I will don't keep worry. You in touch. It's fine.
So we've just seen Ricarda Bauernfeind there win the stage on our screens, on our phones in the car. But meanwhile, at the back here, Morgan and Arthur are just trying to frantically work out whether or not Babette can make the time cut. It's going to be very close, apparently, and stopwatches are ticking away, and they'll be keeping their fingers crossed that Babette can do enough to make it over the line in time. There's a group of about 10 riders, maybe slightly less, and when we went up to them just now to give Babette ice, they look completely exhausted, I guess probably worn out from a very, very long day yesterday and the heat today, so it's going to be touch and go.
Babette, if you hear me, hands up.
Morgan's asking Babette to come back to the car, but I'm not sure if she can hear or not. The group are working very hard together now, doing through and off, great sense of urgency in front of us, and yeah, it's going to be very, very close. So here we go, pulling up alongside Babette now.
Okay, Babette, you have 1:30. You are 1:30 ahead of the time gap, okay? You have 1:30. Keep pushing, okay, girl? Do you need water, ice, gels? Allez. You are 1:30 ahead of the delay. Howdy. Allez, Bobette, allez, last effort in a slightly uphill. Allez, come on, huh? Allez, last 5K, allez. Don't worry, they will keep you in a race because you have this incident. 100% sure.
So the group Babette's with has just been stopped by on the level crossing, and Babette is panicking that she may not now make the time cut, but Morgan has just been trying to convince her that she'll be okay and that she'll make the time cut now because they'll take that into account. But all of the DSs are now rushing to the group of nine riders and trying to reassure them that they'll be okay, but they're clearly very concerned here. It's a real melee as we wait for the train to pass. Thumbs up from a commissaire by the looks of it, so hopefully that's good news. Morgan's just had a word with the commissaire there. Everyone's legging it back to the car now. So what's the news?
Yeah, they stopped the time, but they will just
they'll just add
save
that
2 minutes
right
of the time. So
they're still under pressure.
Yeah, still to work.
Okay. So
allez, it will be good, eh? If you keep walking the last 2K, it will be fine.
So this is we're zooming through the streets now, trying to catch up with the group who are now desperately trying to meet the time cut. As you've probably just heard, they've been told that the stoppage time was kind of deducted from the time they need to make, but it's still not over by any means, and they've got a kilometre to go, so it's going to be touch and go. Let's see if they can make it.
Allez, you will not leave us today, yeah? It's fine, yeah? Allez, come on.
Final 400 metres. Just 200 metres to go now for the girls.
Allez, it's fine. You will be on.
And we can just see them crossing the line as we are diverted off to the course.
Babette and the group has been stuck by the train, like at 2K from the finish line. So at the moment we don't know if we think Babette made it, but I can try to find the referee now. We are in the car in the deviation, but yeah, we don't know at the moment. I'll let you know, but just to let you know about the situation.
Well, I've just been jumped out of the car quickly. Morgan and Arthur had to hop off to the hotel, so I've been dropped off by the team buses, and now I'm going to try and grab some interviews, but also find out whether Babette actually made it or not, because they still weren't sure when they dropped me off. So let's go and find out.
Well, Denny, you left it on a bit of a cliffhanger there. We don't know what happened to Babette van der Wolf at the back of the race. I mean, this is one of those things that we all love about cycling, is that there are so many races going on, aren't there? That even the ones that you are totally unseen and you never even hear of them. But yes, tell us how it resolved. Did Babette actually make it? Was she okay?
Well, I'm pleased to say she made it by 17 seconds, according to the communique. Tom Varney tells me it's 7. The DS of Life Plus Wahoo, but I think it's 17. In any case, she made it just about because they stopped the clock when the level crossing barriers came down. started it again as it lifted, and they managed to race to save their tour. And it was really, really dramatic being in the car, very nerve-wracking for the team. And it just goes to show how much drama goes on that just isn't seen on camera. In fact, you know, that was more nail-biting than the finish today, in a way, certainly for me anyway. But yeah, it was an absolutely brilliant insight to what goes on in the race. Of course, as Lizzie said earlier, two team cars at this race, which is unusual for women's racing. And it meant that the second team car was kind of basically just supporting the riders, giving them refreshments and ice on what was a searingly hot day on the roadside.
It was incredibly hot. I mean, it was kind of 30 degrees.
I think it was over that.
Over 30 degrees.
Yeah.
It was
35, I heard, battered around.
Yeah, and very little shade on the roadside as well, so it must have been horrendous for the
riders.
You
see, I'm someone who doesn't look at the weather forecast, so that's why I was just guessing at temperatures, because I have no concept of what it was meant to be or what it was or how I felt. But it was very, very hot. The sun was very, very strong. We saw a fantastic, obviously, solo win for Ricarda Bauernfeind, but not much of a chase back, really. I mean, obviously, there was the effort there, as you said, Lizzie Nutella, the attack. Marlon Reusser cut a lot of her lead and then kind of ended up away with Leanna Lippert. But there wasn't anyone else that was kind of able to close her down.
No, well, I don't think there was anybody else that was trying, was there? There was a point at 20 kilometres to go, or a little bit before, where the different teams started attacking and counter-attacking, see if they could sort of get across, maybe, because they didn't actually want to pull. But it was just making no difference. Nobody was going anywhere. Everybody has kind of got slightly tired legs at this point. And then eventually SD Works realised, well, you know, they've got to put Reusser off on the front if they want a chance of bringing this back. But it was interesting because I think that you know, quite a few people were actually kind of quite happy to see Bauernfeind win. And, you know, you never want to let a stage win go. But in that group, you know, Capecchi was there. So if anybody else tries to bring it back, Capecchi's probably going to win that sprint to the line. So there's a little bit of,
well,
like...
She won the best of the rest, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
After
exactly.
Well, the only person who's beaten her in a sprint like that is Leanna Lippert, of course, who was away.
That is true, but I mean, there was also that was stage two, wasn't it? And there was a flat punch of a flat tyre for Lottie Capecchi, which what she said was why she didn't quite have the zip. Well, shall we listen to a couple of people that you're kind of referring to there, Lizzie? We'll listen to Marlon Reusser of SD Works first, who was conflicted, and she kind of. Is going to start her interview talking a little bit about the move that she made accidentally and ended up away with Leanna Lippert. And Leanna Lippert of Movistar, who was both of them said that they were kind of there strategically and not going for the win, didn't they? But, you know, read into that what you will. So let's hear first from Marlon Reusser and then from Leanna Lippert.
For me too, I was like, I have to really to see back how this happened. I didn't see that. And yeah, then is Leanna there, who's got a pretty fast sprint also. Me that all did all this work, and I'm anyway not a good sprinter, so, and we have Lotte in the group, so for me and for the team it was clear that I sit in with Leanna, which was a bit not so nice for her. I really like Leanna and would have liked to work with her. And then I was thinking if we make it or not. And there also, like, I somehow hoped we make it. Somehow I also hoped Ricarda would finish it off, because I think it's well deserved and also nice for Canyon SRAM.
You didn't get the sense that there weren't a lot of attacks going at that point from to bring Ricarda Bauernfeind back. Was that because she was too strong? Was everyone trying to get away but couldn't get away?
Before there were a lot of attacks. That's also why we decided we should start to put pace and pull her back. And I think the from this group it's clear. It's high probability for Lotte to win. She's a really fast sprinter. I think the others knew this. And then it's clear that they don't help to pull too much with us always winning and Lotte being so fast. So I really understood the way that this was written, this final.
Is it frustrating being obviously you get to enjoy a lot of wins as an SD Works rider, but it seems sometimes the peloton is against you a bit.
Against I think we still have a lot. I feel like we don't have enemies, but it's clear if a team is so strong and we got so much already this season. I think we have 50 victories. It's also clear that they don't offer us much more. So I really can understand how they ride. I would do the same. I would even be harder with this, I think.
Diana, can you talk through the move with Marlon Reusser? You know, when you saw that she wasn't working, how did you make the decision what to do in that point?
Actually, I still keep on working because our goal is to that Demi Vollering is not gaining more bonus seconds on the finish line. And I think they plan to go with Lotte and Demi for the second. So I give everything to take the seconds away. And I'm really, really happy for Ricarda that she takes the win.
So it wasn't a move to for the win at all? It was just like a strategic move?
Basically, I just follow Marlene and it was not my intention, sorry, to get away. I don't know what happened in the back. I don't know. So for sure, I go for it if I have a gap with a rider like this. And yes.
And tell us a bit about Ricarda. Obviously, you know her as a fellow German rider. You know, she's such an incredible talent, isn't she?
Yes, for sure. I'm so happy, really. I'm really happy for her win. And yeah, I know her well, so she deserved this. And I already said before, I think she can be a surprise, either in the general, but now for a stage, I think it's so good for the German women's cycling. Yes.
Well, that was Liana Lipper. I always think it's so funny how conflicted people, how the riders can be. I mean, we heard Marlon Reusser like wanted to do something for Liana Lipper and didn't want to kind of spoil her chances, but also and also spoil her own chances. But also was quite happy for Ricarda Bauernfeind, and Liana Lipper, as a German compatriot, was obviously delighted that Ricarda Bauernfeind got it. But obviously, she's not her teammate in terms of trade teams. So then also wanted to go for the win herself.
Yeah, it's funny because it was actually the same scenario on stage three when Julie van der Velde was away and Lotte Kopecky was the one doing the lead out for the eventual winner, Lorena Wiebes. And she said it was really difficult for her to do that because she's really, really good friends with Julie van der Velde, and it would have been a huge, huge win for her. But at the end of the day, SD Works pay her bills and she's there to win the races with them. So yeah, it was nice to see Kopecky and van der Velde sort of joking around together on the start line the next day. But it is difficult, you know, we're all there to do a job, but it's really nice to see when riders like Ricarda Bauernfeind win and the whole peloton is so happy. You know, afterwards on the coverage, you could see Marlon Reusser coming over absolutely beaming and saying congratulations to Ricarda Bauernfeind, and everybody coming up so happy for her, not disappointed that they hadn't got the win, just really pure elation for that rider. And that's really nice.
And we have had now two in a row in terms of solo wins, perhaps, you know, unexpected wins, or, you know, at least not SD Works wins for one thing. And I know that Ricarda Bauernfeind, in the press conference she did afterwards, said that she felt that might have been a little bit because the GC battle, people are kind of concentrating on that. The riders are really trying to save energy for the Tourmalet. They know kind of the real racing is yet to come. So they're a little bit more willing to, you know, let a breakaway go away. But obviously it makes for very exciting watching, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And she was, I guess, not to diminish her win at all, but she was the kind of right kind of rider to make that move, and she made it at the right time, and she did it. Mm. She executed it brilliantly. But
well, we saw Claire Steels couldn't.
She couldn't match it. No. So, you know, not to take away from what she did, but on the other hand, with all the GC favourites kind of looking at each other, she was able to kind of slip away and kind of make her mark. And it was it's great to see a different winner, second German winner of the race. I was mentioning the Dutch kind of domination, but they've won two stages now, and just it's been nice to see a lot of solo winners this time around. And although it wasn't, I guess, as thrilling perhaps as some of the other stages we've seen so far, I think what I noticed kind of being in the team car today was just how attritional the race feels already as well. There were groups all over the road, and of course Babette van der Wolf's group was right at the back, but very early on the race was very strung out, and you know the lead group that we saw at the end that came in behind Bauernfeind, they were the ones that have come out well from four very hard days racing, particularly the race the stage yesterday, and I think the heat, as we said earlier, just really took its toll on the riders today as well.
Well, we should actually say, I've actually just remembered, and this is just absolutely awful, that I actually spoke to Marianne Vos on the finish line, and since I've done it, it's not in my notes. I've forgotten to upload it, but we do have an interview with Marianne Vos. I mean, she obviously, you're talking about how attritional it was, how hard it was, you know, how the peloton kind of split up quite early. Obviously, Marianne Vos and Anouska Costa, who was the Polkadot jersey wearer, they ended up in a group behind. Vos would have obviously, is kind of similar to Capecchi, isn't she? And would have really loved a finish like we had today. But, you know, is still building up her strength from surgery. So let's hear what Marianne Vos said.
Marianne, after all your surgery over the winter, how are you feeling? Is the form coming back now?
Yeah, actually, I feel quite okay. It's a hard tour, so that's for sure. Every day from the start on, it's attacking, and then the speed is very high. But I feel quite okay, and every day you try to recover as good as possible to the next day.
How do you see it today? Do you think you're kind of just missing that little bit of extra fitness or race sharpness to have stayed in that front group?
Well, yeah, of course, I would have preferred to be there, but when we hit at the climbs, I also felt like, okay, probably this is the group I'm gonna be in now, and that was the first group at all.
Well, that was undisputably the greatest of all time, Marianne Vos, speaking to me at the finish line. Obviously, a little bit disappointed that she's not kind of fit in the form, perhaps. Happy with the form that she's in, but, you know, obviously, when you're someone like Marianne Vos, you want to be right at the front, don't you? But it can be very difficult to be Marianne Vos because people know you're good and know that you go for the win. And we kind of saw a little bit that dynamic on the road, didn't we, Lizzie? Some riders are allowed to go, some riders are not allowed to go.
Yeah, and there's this really fine balance between the time when you become strong enough in order to be able to make a solo move like Ricardo Bauernfeind did today, and then the time when you've gained that big win or the pelotons realise that you're a threat and then simply just don't let you get an inch. You know, if that was a rider like Nivea Doma who tried to go up the road, they'd have been straight on her. There would have been a reaction straight away. Same with Longo Borghini, the same with Grace Brown. You know, she's had her day of escaping away and now nobody's going to let her move an inch. So,
well, you say Kasia Nivea Doma, Lizzie, but that's exactly what happened to Kasia Nivea Doma. You know, she won the women's tour. She went on a solo break when she was still kind of slightly unknown and people didn't know how strong she was. She won by, you know, won a stage by a minute
or something.
A minute and 2 minutes or something, and then, you know, that meant that the GC was pretty much wrapped up because you went.
Same with your favourite Lizzie Anna Kiesenhofer at the Olympics.
It's awesome. Yeah. But you know, it's true. You know, your card is marked, aren't you? And then you people know that you're a strong rider, and that if you get away, then you really will be away. Well, we can hear the jazz bands are definitely piping up, actually, so I think we're going to have to run. But, I mean, we should let Francois Thomazeau tell us a little bit more about this terrific place. Here's Francois Thomazeau about Albi.
Now for some French flavour with B, Francois Thomazeau.
Right, a little bit of a French flavor from Albi. Well, on the cycling front, it's a town that the Tour de France men has gone to, well, quite a few times in the past. 2019 was the time when Wout van Aert won his first Tour de France stage in Albi, and it's also the birthplace of Lilian Calmejean, won a Tour de France stage in Les Rousses a couple of years ago, and rode the men's tour previously this month. There's another lesser known fact about cycling and Albi. So Albi was the birthplace of the famous French painter Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec, and it's a huge, well, the main museum of Toulouse-Lautrec in France is in Albi. It's a really interesting museum. Toulouse-Lautrec died very young from alcoholism and venereal diseases. He's very famous for his paintings and drawings of the kind of nightlife and the brothels in Paris in the late 19th century. He was actually a great cycling fan. He was introduced to cycling by a friend of his, Tristan Bernard, who was a famous journalist and writer, who was the director and the manager of a famous cycling track called Buffalo in Paris in the in the late 19th and beginning of the 20th century. And Toulouse-Lautrec actually made a few drawings of cyclists of the time and also designed publicity posters for for a chain and for a few cycling brands of the time. So yeah, keen cyclist fan was Toulouse-Lautrec. The other main thing in Albi, and it's obvious when you're in town, is the cathedral and all the religious buildings in the in town, all made of brick, which is very original, and the whole. So it's called the Episcopal City. The whole is listed as, a human heritage site by UNESCO. I mean, the whole thing was actually built in the Middle Ages after the monarchy, the kingdom, cracked down on what was called the Cathar heresy, the heretics of the Cathar were kind of pioneers of what was to become Calvinism and Protestantism. There was, kind of a Puritan form of Christianism that was very popular in the south of France in the 11th and 12th centuries. And so the Pope and the official religion really, destroyed towns, killed people, and to establish kind of a propaganda of the grandeur of Catholicism, they built huge cathedrals, churches, and buildings as a token of the strength of Catholicism. And that's the Albi Episcopal City reflects. Food-wise, one of the very interesting dishes in Albi is cod cassoulet. Yeah, you would believe cassoulet is only made of duck and pork. Well, Lionel, I'm afraid to say that on the Friday, you're not supposed, if you're a good Catholic, you're not supposed to eat meat. So so you go for fish. And in Albi, you'll find very interesting and, delicious cod cassoulet. That's all for today.
Well, that was Francois Thomazeau telling us a bit more about Toulouse-Lautrec being a cycling fan, which I thought was just a fantastic thing that I'd never heard before. But, we want to go and enjoy the spoils of this town, don't we, Denny? So I'm going to wrap it up very quickly, actually, Lizzie. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
And let's knock back these Aperols and get out there, Denny.
Let's go.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.